2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
I've seen the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey,
hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the KSL Greenhouse on this gorgeous day. Happy gardening. It's going to be a toasty one, though, Ton.
It is. What are we, 890 today or 85 today?
Did we just hear him say, we're going to be up to 85 today. So, you know, not as bad as it was yesterday, right, at 95. And then tomorrow down to 78 degrees. So not a bad day if you have some last-minute planting to get in to take care of that.
It is. The garden centers are still well-stocked, and the weather's not going to be too hot. You know, once it's above about 90, I'm done outside until the evening or morning. Mm-hmm. But 85, if I have to, I can do. But there's still time to get lots of flowers in. If you're late on your vegetable garden, even on the tomatoes, you can get those in and get a harvest as long as you're on the Wasatch Front. So there's still time to work, and there's still time to have a beautiful yard if you haven't got it installed yet.
You know, I've even gone to the extreme of, like, getting one of those big picnic umbrellas that go over your picnic table and planting it in the yard so that I can actually continue to work in the yard when it's way too hot and sunny.
Yeah.
I'm an extremist. Okay, I admit it.
No, it's all good. I try to focus my yard. I work outside where there's shade. How's that?
I try to do that as well. But sometimes in the front needs a lot of work and I just can't get to it all.
No, and so the canopies, the water, it's important. I've been finding as I've been getting older that I can't do as much as I want to anymore, and it's frustrating.
Don't even say that. We do not mention age on these programs. That's
I
all
apologize.
I'm going to say. All right.
News and age are out.
This morning you wanted to talk about heirloom tomatoes, and you did a special interview with Sheridan Hansen. Kind of set that up for us.
Sheridan is a very knowledgeable gardener, and she grows a lot of heirloom tomatoes. And she has also co-hosted a couple of times and will be back more. And it's the first time I've actually personally interviewed her, and I was kind of excited to do so. And she's just going to talk about some more commonly available heirlooms that she likes to grow, and they're a little bit about their uses.
Okay, let's listen in.
So an heirloom tomato is a variety of tomato that we say is usually around 50 years old or older, and it's what we call open pollinated, which means it's getting pollinated by the wind, it's getting pollinated by insects, it's getting self-pollinated, and the genetics are stable in these tomatoes, as opposed to a hybrid tomato that the genetics may not be stable. So if I was to grow out a seed from an heirloom tomato that I had saved, I would get the same tomato, where with a hybrid, I would get a totally different tomato. So these are good, stable genetic tomatoes that have usually a history, a story, great flavors, cool colors. The flavor profiles can be really complex in some of them. You get different levels of acidity, different sweetnesses, different even textures on the flesh of the tomatoes. My first tomato is the green zebra tomato. So I love this tomato because it's kind of a medium-sized tomato. I mean, you can eat this very easily, one person in a meal. It's green and yellow striped, which I really like because those green tomatoes kind of take a backseat to some of these other flashier colors. But it has a good amount of acidity and really good for fresh eating. It's an indeterminate variety. So when we talk about tomatoes, we talk about them being determinate or indeterminate. Indeterminate means that they'll keep growing, they'll keep vining, and they'll keep setting fruit throughout the whole season, where a determinate tomato will grow kind of more in a bushy form and will set one crop and kind of be done for the season. So this one, you can trellis, or you can grow in a traditional cage. You can grow on the ground. However you choose to grow your tomato, you can do it with a green zebra. I grow it every year religiously, and it's my husband's favorite tomato too. So we absolutely adore this tomato.
And so how available is it?
This one is fairly available. So you can usually find this one in the larger garden centers, and I have definitely found it in seed catalogs every single year.
So what's your next tomato?
The pink German tomato. And sometimes we call it the pink German giant. It's called the giant because this one produces the largest tomatoes that I've ever grown. These we've grown at the USU Botanical Center, which is where I'm located at for USU Extension. And we consistently have got tomatoes that are larger than a pound. They're light pink in color, so you get this beautiful pink hue. So if you were making a tomato salad, you want to add a bunch of different colors to that salad from different tomatoes. And it kind of has this silky smooth texture. And I'm a texture person. I love how silky smooth this one is. It's not as acidic as what you'd find in a typical red tomato. So if you have people in your family that are a little sensitive to the acidity, this is a really good option. And it's really good for fresh eating. Just great as a slicer. You can put it on sandwiches. You can put it in that salad. And again, this is an indeterminate variety.
I see it occasionally in garden centers. Have you found it fairly available?
This one is really available. So I've seen this one all over the place.
So what's your next tomato?
This is the hybrid, but this is the Better Boy tomato. And this is the quintessential red tomato. It's got that acidic flavor. It's a medium to large tomato, and it's everything that you would expect from that red tomato. It's great for fresh eating. You can use it in sauces. You can use it for canning. You can pretty much use it for anything, and it is prolific. So this actually set a Guinness Book of World Records record. A single plant produced 342 pounds of tomatoes.
And so what's next on your list?
The Goldman's Italian American tomato. This is a really interesting tomato. It's an extra large tomato. It consistently yields fruit that's about a pound. The tomatoes are pear-shaped and they're ruffled. So they have the kind of this ruffled edge on the bottom of the pear shape. It's a really silky texture, kind of like that pink German. And it makes an incredible sauce. So this tomato I grow just for sauce in my garden. So it will continue to yield throughout the season. If you're into creating that tomato sauce, if you're going to do salsa, this is a good variety. Yeah, so there's not a lot of seed and there's not a lot of juice in this tomato. And it's a great tomato. So you really should try it.
So what's your fifth variety?
This one's called the Costoludo Genovese tomato. It is what they call an old Italian tomato. So this is what the old Italian grandmothers would grow, and they would grow them because they can use them for every purpose. You can use it for sauce. You can use it for paste. You can use it for fresh eating. It's a beautiful red kind of medium-sized tomato, and it's very deeply lobed. And it's kind of flat in shape, so it kind of looks a little more disc-like. And those lobes are really distinct. It is an absolutely gorgeous tomato. Whenever we grow it here at the USU Botanical Center, I have more people come and ask, what is that tomato? Because it's just gorgeous. But you can use it for everything. Again, it's indeterminate, so we can get a great crop throughout the entire season. And an interesting fact about this one was grown at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello estate. And it's been around in the United States since the early 1800s. He grew it and he loved it. So a great historic tomato for America, even.
Sheridan, thank you for taking the time. We absolutely appreciate it.
Boy, some fun new tomatoes for me to look at, Tawna. And I want folks to know that Caitlin right now is going to put that up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. And she's also going to put it up on our at kslnewsradio.com/greenhouse if you'd like to hear it there as well. Things seem to go by so quickly, and when you have all of those names, it's tough to write them all down quickly. So you can hear it again at that podcast. So, Ton, I had posted some things on Facebook, and you kind of ignored me this week, or I thought you did on herbs.
I actually liked your post. I actually put a love by it.
I thought it was a chamomile in my garden, but it wasn't. I think it's feverfew. But I mentioned that because I have done an interview with a couple of nutritionists from the State Health Department that I hope to get the podcast up soon, just talking about herbs and really the value of growing herbs in your garden, not just medicinal value and health value, but just you know, getting that extra flavor and how it changes how you perceive of your food. So I'm going to get that up as soon as I can.
I guess this might be more nutritional, but I actually saw some research saying that if obese people ate food with lots of herbs and spices in them as compared to just like salt, that the damage from the fatty foods was far less because of the antioxidants in the herbs.
Interesting.
And so there's a lot of advantage to it. And we should mention that on our Instagram feed that we put up a what plant is it? And it was chamomile versus feverfew.
And which one?
And it was feverfew. And most of the people that commented knew.
I'm sorry that I missed that, obviously. Yeah, the leaves are different.
They are.
The feverfew, the leaves aren't quite as fern-like. They look more fern-like on a chamomile plant.
They do.
All right.
And that's something I want to get more into and just grow and just learn more about, but they're fun.
Okay, well, I have a bunch of herbs in my garden that I'm going to take pictures of, and we'll talk more about those. But people are waiting very patiently with their questions. 801-575-8255, the number to call, 57500. You can text us there. And let's see, we have Tony and Kyle and Alan and Katie, and we're going to get to your questions as soon as we can here on The Greenhouse Show.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome to the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Let's take our next caller, and that is Tony in Riverton. And good morning, Tony. What is your question?
Good morning. Thank you. Actually, I'm calling. I have a place up at Bear Lake, and I have a number of long needle pines. It could be Austrian. And in doing some trimming, I saw that the bark is just riddled with holes. And I was concerned about some sort of bark beetle, but a friend suggested it could be a sapsucker. Is there anything I can do to repair the damage if it's a sapsucker? And how can I tell if it's a bird or an insect?
Well, you would see the bird feeding on the tree. And so...
We have had woodpeckers in the past.
Okay, but none this year?
No, the trees themselves are probably 30 to 40 years old and 40 to 50 feet tall.
Okay. Did you find any sawdust?
I have not seen sawdust. Some sap coming out of the holes, but they don't appear to be in a line either, like might be expected with a sapsucker.
Yeah, I would more suspect there might be some borers in there. But it's really hard to say. And so it may be difficult to do, but you would have to look for fresh holes and see if you see any sawdust or if you have any dead areas in the tree that have the holes. Carefully remove the bark and see if you find what are called galleries underneath where the borers may have fed. So that would be the thing to do. Now, are the trees dying from the top down or anything like that?
They are not. They appear to be healthy otherwise.
Okay, that's good. And so, I mean, it could have been a sapsucker, but I more suspect that it may have been some sort of borers. But I can't really be super specific because it could be a number of different things. Now, when you're saying that some of these are bleeding a little bit, do you see any big, what would be called pitch masses, to where you have a 6-inch to foot wide area that just has sap running all over the place?
No. Okay. It's just a small oozing out of some of the holes and not all.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't Sequoia pitch moth. And where those holes are bleeding, one of the reasons they do that is to try to drown out anything that happened to get into there. So at this point, my best advice would be to maybe get an experienced arborist to come in and do an assessment on the trees. But when you call your local companies, everybody can, a chainsaw and a wheelbarrow and a truck's not too expensive. And so you want to make sure you find a company that has an experienced arborist with diagnostic experience that can help you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, I don't want to lose these trees.
All right, Tony, we appreciate your call. Thank you so much for calling this morning. Ton, our next listener is in Syracuse. They have an aspen tree that appears to have a fungus growing out of the side of it, and they're wondering if there's anything they can put on the tree to get rid of the fungus. He says, or she says, it really struggles every year to stay alive.
Well, it's an aspen. That's kind of synonymous.
Do not discount someone's aspen tree.
Well, oh, all right.
I told you, we have emotions at stake here in our gardens.
So a chainsaw cut at the base of the tree isn't the proper treatment.
No.
Oh, well, I honestly,
it's
aspens.
Good thing I'm not your mother.
Yes, I would be in the corner all the time. Mm-hmm. So aspens are just notorious for not being long-lived trees and being susceptible to dozens and dozens of insects and fungal diseases. And if you plant one, that's fine, but you need to know that this comes with the territory, and you rarely get aspens over about 25 years old in the valleys. And the way we actually recommend working with them is as the bigger trees start to decline, and if they've got a mushroom growing out of the side, it usually means they have internal rot, then you cut that down and let the younger trees take over.
Internal rot? That sounds awful.
Well, the aspens are actually related to willows. They're in separate families but closely allied, and aspens' growth strategy is to grow fast and try to go past a lot of diseases and insects that might feed on it. But when they get big and slow down, a lot of times those insects and diseases catch up. And also, being grown in the valleys, they don't like our hot weather. The way they're irrigated is different than what they would receive in the mountains. And so there's a lot of different factors that make them short-lived trees in the valleys.
Okay, a lot of people have lots of cherries right now. Our next texter says they have cherry trees that the birds are now throwing a house party in. They take the non-ripe cherries, they gnaw on them, and they drop them. How do they repel birds?
Well, there's not really a good solution. Netting the tree can help, but sometimes you get birds trapped in there that will get tangled in the netting. The birds are adjusted to the red color of the fruit, and they identify it as being ripe. And so some people will grow yellow sweet cherries, which are actually fantastic. You know, we're not used to that a little bit, but they have a little bit more mild flavor. So that's one thing. There's just really, besides netting the trees, you know, there's not a good solution out there that will just work.
What about a scarecrow?
Maybe for a day or two, but the birds quickly adjust. You know, the there were some farms down here in Santa Quinn that were playing distressed bird calls in their orchards, and that seemed to work. And you can buy CDs online of distressed bird calls that will kind of keep them away. You always want to turn it up loud enough and point the speakers toward the neighbors who are problems to give them some of their medicine back. I can imagine
sarcastic sense of humor, right?
Calling the police because the neighbors are playing distressed bird calls at extreme volumes.
Abuse.
Yeah, I mean, things like that can work. I've heard of some people mixing up in warm water table sugar solution. They'll put as much table sugar in the water as it will hold and mix up a couple of gallons and spray it on the fruit. And that is supposed to be a solution because birds can't digest sucrose, which is our table sugar. And it's supposed to kind of give them a gut ache, and it doesn't harm them otherwise, but they won't come back to the fruit. Right. And I've talked to some orchardists that like that solution.
Interesting. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Kyle, you're up next when we come back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.